We're going to take your phone calls this hour with Bill. Fascinating work. His website, ghosttown.tv. And we'll be back with Bill and your calls in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, I'm George Norrie. Lines are open for Bill Murphy as we talk about strange and paranormal. You had a live presentation called Psychic Machines, which is said to explore the link between the human mind and the instrumentation of the operator. Tell me a little bit about that. What do you mean by that, Bill?
Sure. This is actually a presentation that I give that kind of gives some of the history into the externalizing of what goes on with our senses. You know, the five senses that we have that are hardwired, you know, seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, and touching, it, you know, tends to be just within our body and, you know, your central nervous system and such. But if you want to even consider going outside of that, then that's going to be psychic. And then the devices that people use to externalize it, it goes back as early as recorded human history was, when you look at even dowsing. So dowsing rods aren't necessarily a machine, so that would have to be referred to as a device if I was going to really be specific. But as man has progressed and technology has been developed, devices have gotten more and more complex, and now we have a number of machines that sort of can externalize what we're sensing. And in some cases, not just what we're sensing, but, you know, they can execute a desired effect. I do have, you know, several examples if you want to hear about some of those devices.
All right, try it on us.
Okay, sure. In addition to the regular, you know, dowsing rods and pendulums and crystals, probably the single largest class of psychic machines is radionics. So a radionics device is a device that is part of a class of alternative healing equipment. And there's so many devices that are radionic machines that were designed to heal people that at this point, there's thousands of different models of these devices. Now, in the United States, it was outlawed, and you can't use them for a medical practice if a person is involved. But people use them now for agriculture. They use them for livestock. And what was discovered is that they don't necessarily be used for healing. You can use them to harm or to kill. And there's an analogy to radionics machines to, you know, more primitive devices or more primitive cultures that were using, you know, any sort of object in a ceremonial sense that would execute a desired wish. You know, a voodoo doll is probably the first example. And by the way, I should mention that voodoo dolls really, for the most part, have not been traditionally used to harm other people. So, you know, Hollywood likes to say, you know, stick a pin in the voodoo doll to make the person feel the pain, but they were usually used to attract a love interest and such. So
I was also told by a friend from Haiti that he said originally the voodoo dolls, the reason why they stuck pins in them is they would put little name tags on the dolls, not to do anything evil to somebody, but they would stick the name, you know, the piece of paper of the guy's name or the woman's name on the doll.
That would make sense. I mean, you know, part of the whole idea behind voodoo is that, you know, it's got to be a belief system shared by all. So in the case of voodoo dolls and other sort of ceremonial pieces, the person that you wish to affect has to see it, and they have to know about it. And so they would put a doll or some sort of scrap that had, you know, some of the person's personal belongings in a container or in a bag. And they would leave that, you know, under the front step of the residence or, you know, right by a path leading to a person's home. And by seeing it, then they could feel that they were hexed. And it didn't necessarily mean, you know, hexed in a bad way. It could mean that, you know, somebody's thinking about them.
Okay, let's go to some of the phones. You ready?
Sure.
Aileen in Ohio, east of the Rockies, you're up with us on Coast to Coast. Hi, Aileen.
Hi, George. How are you tonight?
We're doing great, thanks.
Now, I'm hoping Bill can answer my question. He's been on the Queen Mary where he has seen the hauntings, and or however you want to say it. We have one in our home, and it's a man, Jamal, but he'll never leave. Does Bill know any other way to get him out besides everything that I've gone through? I mean, I haven't used my crystals yet, but I've tried everything, the candles, the go to the light. And he just likes to mess around with you. He doesn't want to say he's dead. He doesn't like being told that.
Any exposure there, Bill?
Well, Aline, thank you for the call, first off. But have you simply asked that this person who you've got a name for, have you asked him to leave?
Yes.
And what's the response?
He wants to stay. He doesn't want to be dead. He wants to just hang around.
And may I ask, how is the communication occurring between those?
Through my husband and him. I've noticed a few things. Some lights are on when they shouldn't be, when I've turned it off specifically, and I went down again and it was on. Our dog's toys were moved out of a gate where the dog couldn't have done it. But my husband has the ability to do this, and I don't.
It sounds like he has a dialogue going on.
Yes, they do.
That may be what's keeping him there in the first place.
Okay.
If your husband keeps communicating with him, and I'm not sure how the communication is occurring, nor do I want to necessarily present myself as an expert on a clearing like this, but if your husband is seeking out his company, then maybe he simply ignores him and stops trying to record an EVP if that's what he's doing.
No, it just happened one night, and mentally is how they do it, but he doesn't want me around. And he said sometimes he just doesn't want me going downstairs because this guy's trouble.
Are you sure your husband wants him to leave?
Yeah. Oh, definitely. Especially when we have the grandkids over and everything.
Well, that would certainly make sense because,
yes.
You know, once a person opens themselves up to this sort of communication, it tends to escalate over time as opposed to diminish. So it would probably involve more effort on your husband's part than the gentleman who's been visiting you guys in a spirit form, if that's what it is.
Bill, when the portal is open, all kinds of things happen.
Yes, and you become more aware of it. It's like the more you indulge in paranormal research or paranormal investigating, then the more things reveal themselves. And that could be really because your own self-doubt tends to go away, and you start to believe your own senses as time goes on.
Let's go to Birmingham, Alabama. Greg on the wild card line. Greg, good morning.
Good morning. How are
Thanks
you,
for calling. Good, thank you.
Mr. Murphy?
Hey, Greg, how you doing?
Fine. I had an experience that's really have had me shook up lately. And it's happened to me about three times. I'm a truck driver. I'm off tonight. When I leave home and go up the road, I stop and rest. And I just lay in my bunk, and I felt this wave of energy of something like I went through a dimension barrier. And that sounds crazy, but that's what happened. I closed my eyes, and I see this person. When I close my eyes, that's when the wave thing hit me. That's the only way I can explain it. And I see this person, and it's a different world. And I'm very aware that it's a different world. And this person sees me also. And he's looking very intense. And I'm like, what done happened to me? I'm no longer on Earth. And the guy looks at me, and he walks off. And then a giant. At first, I saw what I thought was a building. And then this humongous being. Look, he's taller than the building. And it's his throne. And he gets up, and he walks away. And he was also very, very intense. You know, a person like they're concerned about something, they're looking. And when I saw them, I knew that they could see me also, looking at them.
Well, Greg, you know, fortunately, this doesn't sound like it's threatening.
Happening.
Yeah, this is happening. Now, is this when you're like in a meditative state?
No, I just got from behind the steering wheel and laid down in my park and just shut my eyes, and this happens.
Well, you know what? Since this isn't causing you harm, so to speak, but you're trying to grapple with the meaning of having these visions, I mean, I'm of the sort that if it's happening to me, I would kind of go with it. I mean, there may be information or messages that you'll be able to get through these visions that you have. I mean, maybe you should embrace this gift because it there's nothing harmful that you've described so far.
Have you done any work, Bill, into the arena of dreams and intuitive dreams, psychic dreams yet?
I have, and it's not something I kind of set out to do. I started to attend a series of workshops on meditating, and I did not think I was a good candidate at all. I have a very busy mind. I live in a very busy city like you do, George. I mean, Los Angeles is a lot of things to get our attention, and so I did prepare myself by turning off my cell phone, unplugging the landline, and stop opening the mail. I'll turn on the computer and let all these distractions go away before I started attending these workshops. And then in doing so, I better prepared myself for this to go into these meditative states. It was guided meditation, and there's, of course, technology that you can use to assist the process, binaural beat technology embedded in guided meditation CDs. And in doing so, I started to become much more intuitive and was able to sense a lot more around me that I did not realize was here all the time.
Okay, next up, let's go to Roger in Los Angeles. Speaking of a big city, hey, Roger, go ahead.
Hi, thank you. I just wondered, I'm assuming it's possible for a person to be kind of a conduit for either negative or positive energy flow. My basic curiosity is because when I was like 18, it's happened several times. When I was 18, I was up in my bedroom, and I was focusing on some negative energy. And after that, I never told anybody about it, but after that, nobody could sleep in that bedroom. Every time they went to sleep, they became afraid to sleep out there and had to leave. And that happened like two other times in places that I lived. One place was in at college. It was an abandoned home that somebody kind of renovated, and it was still half renovated, but I moved up to the other upstairs flat, and I just felt this negative energy, but it seemed to, I focused it, and it always seems like the bedrooms are like a key focus point. But after that, like my girlfriend came over to sleep, and I went out of the room, and she started screaming because she thought somebody was in the room with her. And the lights were out and stuff like that. But she could sense that there was somebody in there, which I never told her anything like that. So is that possible?
Roger. Your name is Roger?
Yes.
You brought up a really good point, and it's kind of been the focus of a lot of my research ever since doing my first documentary, Ghost Town. That these emotions and these focus that a person has, even if you leave the room, it can tend to seep into the environment, and other people come into the environment and they pick up on it.
Huh.
And it is real. It does tend to happen. Why it happens, it can be a mystery. I was able to sort of flesh it out a lot more in Estes Park at the Stanley. But as far as your particular location, I don't know where you're calling from exactly, but these emotions do seep into the environment. So, I mean, just trying to have a positive thought and think about the other people that are going to be coming after you, because if you do have these negative feelings and negative emotions, rest assured, well, actually don't rest assured, but, do realize that other people will pick up on it.
Yeah, it was the first time I did it was like I was kind of grouping on trying to summon up a spirit, right? And all of a sudden I got freaked out because I sensed something was there, so I turned on the lights and then just kind of dispelled it like it was just my imagination. But for years and years, I never told anybody, but nobody could sleep up in that room. Then they had somebody come in to, do a kind of a cleansing of the room.
Mm-hmm.
But it never really cleansed it. People still couldn't sleep up there. This was back in Michigan where I lived, and several places in Michigan that I had moved to, I had tried that just to experiment, and summing it up, kind of not necessarily demons, but some kind of spirit. But it seemed like they were always kind of negative and very strong. Or it was like I could sense the negative spirit or negative energy in the building and I could almost focus it into a specific area to where it would draw it and harness it. And when people would go in there, like my girlfriend, I never told her about it, but she just literally felt like somebody was in there getting ready to touch her, and she knew that I was out of the room, and she screamed, and my family never could go up. And there was a third time like that, too. So,
You know what? It reminds me of the old term, be careful what you wish for. In the case of what you're describing now, you know, people can manifest into this physical world. That's actually the underlying tone of psychic machines. You know, as I advance in that presentation, really, it's about manifesting in the physical world. So it's what starts off as a thought, you can actually create. And just the fact that this is something that you're trying to call out, well, you know, you're making it happen. So you may want to try a different approach to what you're looking for.
Do you call yourself a paranormal researcher or more of a documentary producer?
I'm a paranormal researcher first and documentarian second.
And your love primarily is what?
My fiance, Anita.
Good answer.
As far as my love, you're referring to like...
your passion.
What do I prefer to do? Well, George, I have a very curious mind, and so I think researching mysterious phenomena, I don't always like to use the word paranormal because a lot of things that we don't understand fall into the paranormal classification. And, you know, there's a phrase that scientists like to use, and I'm not a scientist, I'm a media professional, but the phrase I like to use that science will always catch up. And, you know, this gentleman I know who's a writer, he says, you know, 3,000 years ago, we could not measure or even prove that oxygen was in our atmosphere. But as we all know, our survival depended on it. Nowadays, we can very precisely measure how much oxygen is in our environment. So these things are around us. And, you know, the science is getting more sophisticated, and a lot of people are very creative, and there's some good experimental equipment that is being built, and people are getting, sometimes good results with the experimental equipment.
Have you noticed how many people are so interested in the unusual, the paranormal, the strange? I mean, it seems to be growing all the time, Bill.
It is growing. It tends to run in cycles. If you look at, you know, what's happened, you know, in historically, even looking at what's happened here in the United States and, you know, the short span of our own history here, it kind of goes in waves. And, you know, what happened in the 20s and 30s, and then it's, you know, 40s, and it starts to kind of dip back down. And then in the 60s and 70s, there was this new awareness and the new age wave that happened then. And then it sort of dipped back down, and it's actually, you know, at a very high peak right now. And who knows how long it's going to last.
All right, Bill, we're going to take some final phone calls with you when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. And next hour, we'll start those open lines. I'll be back. Got an email today from my colleague who works on Streamlink, and he said, George, technically, just want you to know we're getting really close to being able to give Streamlink members the ability to download the past 1 year of programs, and they're working on expanding that even more down the line. So that's pretty good news. If you are not a member of Streamlink, you can do so for just pennies a day. Get downloads and podcasting by going to coasttocoastam.com. Bill, can we get truly any more evidence of the existence of the hereafter? I mean, we have testimony from people who claim to have seen the light, testimony from people who have seen their loved ones who have died come back. We have all kinds of bizarre stories of hauntings. You've researched many. How much more information do we need before science can categorically say it exists?
Well, even if science comes out and says it, you'll always have your detractors and your skeptics that will disbelieve it, because the way it's been so far, and I mentioned this earlier in the program, is that it's the nature of this kind of phenomena is such, just like human nature is, that it doesn't necessarily repeat itself. And so not everything can be recreated in a lab environment, even if they mimic the exact conditions that you recorded the evidence in the first place. But science is getting better and better and more advanced, and I'm seeing a lot of compelling evidence coming out in ways that are unexpected. It's almost like the creator of the equipment are the ones that are raising the bar. There's an event coming up in September where it's going to be a lot of new science is going to be shown. And I'm very much looking forward to this because it feels like the breakthrough is just right around the corner. And what's happened is it's research in the paranormal has gotten more popular, and as TV shows have now cropped up.
Oh, my God, they're everywhere.
They're all over the place. And that is kind of giving social permission for people that are in fields of work that maybe they felt uncomfortable coming forward and coming out public and saying, hey, I've created this equipment designed to detect the presence of a paranormal nature. And now people can come out and they can present this to the public, and some items are being mass-produced. And that's a fortunate thing, because the more people that get hold of this equipment, then the greater the likelihood of an increased number of evidence that's going to be documented. So I'll be speaking at an upcoming event on the Queen Mary, of all places, and I'll be giving the Psychic Machines presentation. I actually have another one. I have Psychic Machines Part 2, but they've asked me to give this current one because it kind of sets the stage of where it's going. And I look forward to what's going to be happening just in the next few months, George.
Great. And make sure you report back to us, Bill. Okay?
I will.
Let's go to Pasadena. David, South Pasadena in California. Hey, David, go ahead.
Hi, Bill. I think my question really is a rhetorical one. I don't know why we have to call it paranormal. Here's my example. I can't see through my skin through my arm into my bones. I need another form of electromagnetic radiation monitor. It's called an X-ray machine. It's electromagnetic radiation. I can't see infrared with my own visual cortex. I only see between 250 millionths of a micron to 750 millionths of a micron, and that's only 500 millionths of all of the electromagnetic radiation out there, which means I'm only seeing a small portion of what the universe has got to offer. And what you guys have been doing very diligently with people throwing rocks at you is digging around in stuff that really, should it be called paranormal, or should it be called hey, we found the universe, and we're not as dumb as we used to be, and
yeah,
thanks to people like Bill. I'll get off the phone and let you guys go on.
You know, Bill, I've long since suspected that maybe we should be the normal. Maybe everything else is the supernatural or the paranormal.
Well, I agree with you and David, the caller, that it's, I don't necessarily like to use that term, just throw it around all the time and say, you know, this is paranormal and that is paranormal, because a lot of it is just still undefined. And that's really why science is kind of stepping in, and instrumentation is becoming more important, even though to an individual or group that have had personal experiences, none of that validation is necessary. If you've had a personal experience, you really don't care, at least the average person doesn't care if the next person believes them or not, because they know what they saw, felt, or heard, or however they perceived it. And for the greater portion of the population, they kind of do want to be able to have that validation because they have not had their personal experience. For me, as a person who produces documentaries, I'm reliant on technology to be able to record, if not directly, then indirectly, these effects on the environment and this communication that doesn't have an explanation in terms that we are more ready to accept. So I have to turn to technology so I can record it. But I don't need to proof myself anymore.
Next up, let's go to Louisville. Hello, Chris, east of the Rockies. Thanks for calling, Chris.
Hello. I'm glad to be on the show.
Sure.
I just wanted to say that some years ago, I had gone to a family reunion, and I don't come from a family of scientists, but I happen to have a cousin who is a professor, or was a professor, he's since deceased, at Center College, and he had a PhD in oceanography and a master's degree in particle physics. Well, he let loose the fact that he had tried to drill some wells to find water on his farm. And he said he had drilled three times, and he specified where he wanted it to be drilled, the hole to be drilled, and missed. So then he, a scientist with a PhD in oceanography and a master's in particle physics, hired a water witch. And the two wells that he wanted drilled, hit, according to the water witch's directions, both times. So he told us that during the family reunion, and I was just wanting you to, and I know that you just got through saying that you don't really want to necessarily, you know, prove that this is true, but I was wondering if you could share some personal experiences or information that you've uncovered that kind of reveals the same kind of thing, as sort of evidence.
Well, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, that's all I was interested in, just sort of, okay. I mean, I kind of respectfully.
Sure, more than glad to. And I'd first like to comment on what you just stated as far as the water witch. It sounded like a dowser, you know, person coming in and through probably, you know, either dowsing rods or some sort of instrumentation, pendulums or something. These people that have developed this skill are able to better sense or better be in tune with the energy of the earth, the natural resonance of the earth, you know, known as the Schumann cavity. The earth does have its own vibration, and they can find these areas of different mass, liquid versus solid. And if you look back how water dowsers were treated going back into, you know, the hundreds of years ago, especially in England, it was considered to be at odds with the teaching of the church, and people who doused were regularly executed. And what was happening, the villages that depended on wells began to die off. And so they could continue to collect taxes from these villages. They had to finally ignore this decree from the church to execute these dowsers because people were simply unable to survive in these areas. So what this person in your family described, having a water witch, to use that term, come in and find water, has a very rich and proven history. People do douse for anything, not necessarily natural resources, for lost objects or for future directions, anything. As to get to your question, as far as my own experiences, I'm always hesitant to share them with people because what I do and what I present to others is based on what I'm able to record. I record these things and I record evidence so I can present to other people that these mysterious phenomena do in fact happen, and they happen all the time. What got me into it was an experience at my parents' house, and it was an experience that I did not expect. It was the shadow person, and a lot of people, you don't have shadow person experiences. The one that I had was a bit different from most of the descriptions because it wasn't like a dark shadow in the traditional sense. It was really the outline of a shadow person with a wide-brimmed hat, and it walked between my parents and myself and while we were having a conversation, and I thought it was an animal entering the room. I looked down. We didn't have any pets there. Actually, I moved to California already, and I went back to my parents to go visit them, and then they didn't have any pets. And so when I looked down, thinking it was an animal, I realized it was a foot, and I leaned back, and it was an entire person with the hat. And it took a number of years before I really began to fully research this. I really had a hard time with it. I did not want to accept it because I had no way to validate what I personally experienced. That's why I turned to science.
Good for you. Let's go to San Francisco now. Another Chris, west of the Rockies. Chris, go ahead.
Hey, George. Great to get through.
Sure thing.
Yeah, I wanted to mention this book. I think both you and your guests would be interested. I know, especially you, because I know you like the scientific validation of some of this stuff. And it's called The Sense of Being Stared At.
Okay.
And I don't have the author's name, but it's a Cambridge professor. And the book kind of made me change from a skeptic to a believer, because I just thought this guy, he provided a lot of good you know, scientific validation of the paranormal, and he gets into with the earthquakes, with the animals, being able to sense that, and he kind of explores some of the science. And his basic idea is that we're all energy fields, and that when we look out on the world, we're actually extending our energy, so that every time you, every, you know, moment you're perceiving the world, you're actually, as much as you're taking in the world, you're also sending out your own energy fields and projecting those. So his main thing was with, you know, validating the idea that when you stare at someone, that person can sense it with more
sure.
than...
Well, we've had that author on the program before. That's Rupert Sheldrake.
Yeah. Oh, wow. That's great to hear.
As a matter of fact, he was at a conference, I think about a year or so ago. Somebody lunged from the crowd and stabbed him in the leg.
Wow.
He's recovering now, but we've had him on.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, because I just thought that book was really right on, and it, you know, with in addition to listening to your show, you know, I sort of, you know, really turned on to a lot of the ideas you expressed. So thanks a lot. Great. Great to hear.
Yes, absolutely.
The stare effect is really a fascinating area. It's a perfect example of non-physical communication, and it's a game that school kids play. You know, you stare at the person in the front row to try to make them turn around.
Oh, we've all done that too, haven't we?
Oh, absolutely. And it happens, you know, every day in traffic too. You just, you know, back of your ear starts to kind of, you know, tickle, and you turn around, and there's a person in his car that's staring at you.
Are we dealing, though, with probability? The longer you stare, eventually they're going to turn around?
No, I don't believe it's that, because it can happen really quickly. And I'm not sure if it's in a book or not, where it documents that in U.S. military training, you know, snipers use a buddy system. You've got the spotter with the binoculars, and he
right.
finds a target, because snipers know that once they get somebody in their crosshairs, even though it's only seconds, you know, the person who's in the crosshairs will feel that they're in the crosshairs.
They'll stare and look right at the sniper.
Or if it's a seasoned soldier who's in the crosshairs, he'll duck.
That's a good point. Mm-hmm. Good point. San Jose we go. Charles, you're on with Bill Murphy. Hey, Charles.
Hey there. Hey, great show tonight, guys. I just had a quick question. My granddad used to get haunted, and I have like countless stories of the old days during the war in World War II over there in Europe. And I was told these stories because I got haunted as a child also. Various hauntings and presence and different things, but my bed would shake, and I'd see this billy goat kicking the bed from underneath, and it'd rock, and I'd run down the hall. I was about six, you know, and eight and nine, and just throughout my life, different things, different circumstance. And, you know, I was just wondering if it's like a family-tied thing, you know, some sort of relation, or just a positioning or a bloodline even.
Well, that's a good question. Almost sounds like, are you saying... Is the ability to detect an unseen presence, or one that you can visualize, is it hereditary? Is that your question?
Yeah. Well, here's the other thing on that is, I used to do paint jobs. You know, I did my own self-employed stuff, and I'd go into different apartments and homes at night when no one was there, and now and then I would feel a presence. And anytime there's a power thing going on or an electrical, and I feel the presence, if I'm doing running the vacuum cleaner or anything power, it will blow out. And usually it kills the equipment. And also when I talk about this stuff, then I go into a, not even a deep type of emotion, but just some sort of a shallow contact, even just a thought on it. My TVs will go off, you know, if I'm playing them or if there's someone else that I'm talking to about it, which is a subject I rarely go into, and which rarely brought up around me lately in my life. Now I'm in my 40s now, and you know, so that's something you don't want to talk about, you know, if you really don't want to enter those realms, which, you know, I don't really want to, right?
Well, I guess it depends on how your family reacts to it. I mean, I always have to choose my own audience carefully. Around other television producers and other people in my industry, I don't necessarily talk about my personal experiences. I talk about my work, but it's kind of like two separate things. If it's something that's it is hereditary, then I'm the only one out of me and my siblings that tends to have these sort of experiences. But then again, I'm immersed in this, and so I look, and so I've now had them. What happened to me with my own shadow person experience I spoke of earlier seemed to be isolated because I wasn't looking for it, wasn't, you know, doing any kind of investigating or researching. Now that I'm, you know, completely involved into this, stuff happens much more frequently. The only other person in my family that I learned after the fact described the same thing was my grandmother. So it's no real consistency if it runs in families or not.
Absolutely. Let's squeeze in one more quick call. Porterville, California. Javier, go ahead, Javi.
Hi.
Hey.
Hello.
Thank God.
You made it.
Pleasure to talk to you guys. Mr. Murray, I think you're brilliant, and listening to you.
Oh, well, thank you. It's a very, very kind overstatement.
I've always been intuitive in my life. You know, I've always had premonitions and seen, you know, who was calling on the phone prior, before even they called and stuff. And, you know, my life's, I'm almost 50, and, you know.
Still a kid, Javier. Still a kid.
Yeah, relish the moment.
Anyway, I've been told that I've had a curse on me by this girlfriend, which actually was just an acquaintance. You know, she was a waitress now, was a waiter. And she put a curse on me because she wanted me so bad. And a voodoo curse, and it was called the curse of the 11 tongues. You know, you were talking about voodoo. I'm not sure if you're really familiar with that stuff. And
well,
I'll tell you what, too. I want to hold you over for the top of the hour because I want to know more about the curse. Can you do that?
Sure. Can I call? Yeah, I'll call back because I got to change phones.
Okay, I'll let you do that. Hopefully you can get back in. Curses are unbelievable, Bill.
They are, and as we spoke about some of the psychic machines and psychic devices and, you know, voodoo dolls was one of them, it does require a belief system. In the case of being cursed, in the case of something like radionics, ironically, it does not require that the target individual know that they are, in fact, targeted.
Bill's website, ghosttown.tv, does a great job. Bill, thank you for being on the program. I shall be back in a moment with Open Lines right here on Coast to Coast AM.